I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
There's a lot more punks than there was 4 years earlier, but there was also as many posers. Posers were people that looked like punks, but they did it for fashion.
Welcome to SLC Punks, a Utah Jazz podcast brought to you by the staff of SLC Dunk. Now here's your hosts, Michael Lohman and James Hansen.
Welcome back to the SLC Punks podcast. This is your host, Hansen James.
And this is Milo. And Hansen, where were you when?
They want him to shoot it.
And he does. Ben Simmons shoots the three. The fans want it. They're asking for it. And Ben Simmons is giving it to him. Joel Embiid comes onto the court and gives him a big hug. That has got to feel good. Let's take a look at it again, shall we? Okay, fans are on their feet. Let me get what they want.
If I'm Ben, I'm saying, what's all the fuss about? This is what I do now. Leave me open. I'm going to make you pay.
Money in the bank. I've been working.
Anything is possible. Man, can you imagine having your, like, we were going to Disneyland moment in a preseason game? Can you just imagine?
I kind of imagine the reaction to that would be the same thing as if I'd have made a three in the Stars tryout. That would have been similar. Wow, he did this thing we didn't think he'd ever do.
Wow. Man. Good for him, though. I mean, this is a really great thing. This is a really great thing. Now, if, just imagine if it would have really counted. Man.
Would have been, I mean, even better.
Can you imagine, like, 3 points, like a real 3 points, like it actually going on your stats, like real stats? Here's the thing. He's now hit a three in a game and it's not going to be on his stats. This is But every Philadelphia 76ers fan is going to remember where they were when Ben Simmons hit a three over the Shenzhou Sharks. Yeah. In preseason.
Congrats. Welcome to 21st century basketball.
Oh, man. So great. It's going to be awesome when he shoots like 8% from three for the rest of the year. So, James, we've had preseason game. We've had a preseason game.
We do. We've had preseason. We have practices. We have quotes. We got some things we got to see, although it's only one preseason game tomorrow. Well, we're recording this. Today is Tuesday, so this will come out Wednesday. So tonight there is a game. But
yes, tonight.
I'm excited to watch, hopefully, Mike Conley. I think we saw that Dante Exum has been ruled out. They're just continuing to rehab him. And it looks like Emmanuel Mudiay is out, but we don't have word on whether Mike Conley will play or anyone else. I personally just hope he is, just because I am excited to watch him play. And I honestly just want to see what that starting lineup is. And so I guess we'll probably find out at any minute as you guys listen to this podcast.
Any minute. In fact, we have some breaking. No, we don't. We don't have any breaking news. Let's talk about what you liked from the first preseason game. There's not a lot to draw from because I think every writer in the Jazz sphere, whether it was Tony Jones, Andy Larson, Ben Anderson, myself, David Locke podcasted about it, but I just don't think there wasn't a lot you could draw from by this. I'm meaning like, oh wow, so and so is really going to take off this year. I'm not sure you could really extrapolate that from this game. I think you could see that certain people just looked way better than their NBL counterpart. I mean, there was one point in which Jerome Randall, who is an NBL MVP, went rolling down the paint, ran into Joe Ingles. Joe Ingles didn't even move. He just like put his hand up, threw the ball down in a block. And then Jerome Randall kind of gave him like this look, and Joe Ingles gave him a look back. Like, what are you going to do, man? Like, what? Like, it was like almost a shrug. Like, are we really doing this? Like, it's not even on my level, man. And it was like peak YMCA dad moment in a way, where it's just like, what are you going to do? Like, he didn't even move, didn't even have to shuffle. But that was kind of emblematic of the entire game, where the other than the first like 6 to 7 minutes, where it was like, wow, are we really going to do this against the Adelaide 36ers again for the second year in a row, where we just struggle against them for no apparent reason because no one's trying? It just looked like the Jazz knew they were way, way better. And despite not having Mike Conley, Donovan Mitchell, and Rudy Gobert, they beat them by 50.
Which is what they should do, obviously. I guess there was a couple things that I saw that made me happy. I guess three things. The first was I was excited to watch Bojan, and I had watched, you know, a handful of games last season. He's one of those players that I kind of started watching because I knew he might be possible for the Jazz in the offseason, and when we got him, it was just really exciting. But I didn't realize how well he could run a pick and roll, I thought. I guess I was just surprised to see him running plays a little bit and getting picks and then kind of initiating that way. I knew he could handle and go to the rim and things like that, mm-hmm. but I kind of expected it to be kind of one of those things where it's like he receives the ball at the corner, and if he's open, he takes it. If he's not, he kind of pump fakes and drives to the rim type thing. But he was like taking picks and initiating a pick and roll, and that was exciting to see. And it made a lot of sense because one of those first quotes we got from the beginning of training camp was like the first play in training camp was Bojan lobbing it to Rudy Gobert. So
yeah, Bogdanovic. Yeah, and Rudy was like, "Yeah, I think we're getting along just fine." That was the first play, so.
Mm-hmm. And so that was exciting to see, just see like Bojan kind of show. And I think the other thing that I liked with Bojan is because the game, I mean, they did win by 52, but, you know, they started the game. It was a little bit closer than you would expect. And it looked like a team that was just kind of figuring things out. And I liked Bojan's demeanor. He just looked like someone who, you know, he's like someone who shows up to a concert, to a band they've never seen, but he was acting like he's known the band forever. And, he was calm. And I think the other players on the team fed off of that. Like Nigel Williams-Goss, who getting his first start ever, was probably a little nervous. And I think Bojan's demeanor helped him be calm. And Bojan didn't even hit, I think he shot like 33% from three. So he didn't even have a great night
both
shooting.
Him and Joe shot 33%. But they were the primary scorers. Like they were going to have the attention of the defense on them, but still.
And we won by 52. And so that was, I just liked his demeanor. He's obviously a weathered veteran that's going to come in and not be rattled. I mean, he's been in playoff games guarding LeBron. There's not a lot of things that Bojan hasn't seen. So that was just nice to see. That was one of the things I really liked.
Yeah. I think one of the things that you could take away from this was just the way the Utah Jazz were playing. They were playing fast. They were playing very up-tempo. If this was a game last season, I would be tweeting, the Jazz need to slow this game down and get it within their pace.
Mm-hmm.
Versus this year where it's just like, we're running. And that's the difference of between having Derek Favors start the game. The Jazz would try to move into a more speedy offense and in transition, but they always had like two different identities, three actually, that they'd run through. Their first identity was with Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert out there, so they weren't really running as much because if you ran, then you only had two shooters and three guys who were just really going to get down there. So you're more really trying to run your sets. The second one was when Jay Crowder would come in for Derek Favors. And then you'd have it always had this feeling of like you wanted them to run, but because the initial starters were just so used to the way they were playing with Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert, it was like trying to shift them into another gear. It was hard to get them to go. And then you had your other one where you would have Derek Favors out there as a five. And it was a similar thing. And crazy enough, the one with Derek Favors at the five actually ran faster, but still was like this slow going thing. But the entire game, the Jazz were just moving. So that did show in the turnovers. There was an increase in turnovers. That needs to get taken care of, but I think that's a bit of unfamiliarity with each other. You have three guys who are out, who are normally starters, and who are projected to be starters, not normally, because they haven't played together. And then they're playing faster. That's going to happen when you play fast. There's going to be more mistakes had, but you're going to have more opportunities to score. And that's kind of been the missing component with Utah's really great defense in the past, is you have this amazing defense, you get the defensive rebound, and then you're not just like punishing them as quickly as you can. So you're losing an opportunity while the defense is unsettled. So that's going to be something Utah's going to be able to take advantage of. The other thing that I really like scheme-wise was the spacing. And that was apparent from the get-go. Like every single time they were running a pick and roll and dumping it down to Ed Davis, I was like, look at like the floor is just spread. Ed Davis is the only dude down there with the ball. And I wrote this in the recap. I said, I totally think that Rudy Gobert is going to have way more assists than I anticipated, or he's going to have more assist opportunities. I shouldn't say he's going to have more assists, but he's going to have more assist opportunities or more hockey assists as they rotate that ball and get it to the open man. That's going to be key to Utah's offense this upcoming season, is how much can Rudy Gobert improve as a passer when he has that advantage, and the spacing down there. Because they have to decide whether they want to collapse, and they were deciding to collapse on Ed Davis. And I believe their idea was, let's try to make Ed Davis make a bad decision through the kickout instead of letting him bully a smaller guy at the rim. It's going to be interesting to see what teams decide to do with Rudy Gobert in that same situation, someone who can convert much better at the rim. And when you have Boyan and Joe Ingles and Donovan Mitchell and Mike Conley or Royce O'Neal out there, that's going to be a really big thing for the Utah Jazz.
Oh, well, you kind of touched on two things that I mean, I completely agree. The spacing was just, I mean, we're just not used to it.
It would look weird. Like the way I looked at it, I kept thinking, man, these guys just don't know their defensive sets. And then you're realizing, oh no, they know exactly, because if you saw that last year, your initial thought was, dude, guys, Rubio's not going to light it up on you. Thank you for guarding him close, but you're really doing too much.
Well, we kind of just saw the difference between having, you know, it's when you got guys on the floor that can hit shots, it's just mm-hmm. different. Because those guys have, I mean, a bad shooting night with good shooters is just, it's just an anomaly. But when you have shooters like Conley and Mitchell and Boyan and Joe and all these guys on the floor, they will always have to be honest with you. With last season, they didn't. And so the spacing wasn't there. And so we saw the game start. And honestly, the shooting wasn't good that game. Like most of the guys on the team,
it was not at all.
Boyan didn't have his typical good shooting night. George Niang didn't have a good shooting night. No one could really hit a shot, but because they're all bona fide shooters, they still got that spacing and they won by 52 because they could drive to the rim. I mean, we mentioned Rudy Gobert, and you think about the spacing on the floor. Rudy might just absolutely dominate the league next year. When has Rudy had spacing like this with shooters that can knock it down? Like,
I can't remember the last time.
I mean, honestly, Jay Crowder
had that.
Well, yeah, even Jay Crowder, they used to leave alone last year because it was like, well, if the worst thing they can do is give it to a 30% 3-point shooter, then we win. when Rudy's on the floor with that, and you have a spread floor, and you've got Donovan or Joe, or and now apparently Bojan that can just run a pick and roll with Rudy. Oh my gosh, Rudy is going to just absolutely feast. He might shoot 75% for the season. Who knows? Like it's really like the prospect is insane, and so that's why I'm just like really excited to see Mike Conley get his first pick and roll with Rudy Gobert and just see what that looks like. My guess is that it looks like, you know, the best Cinnamon Toast Crunch you've ever eaten or something like that. Like it's going to be freaking amazing. And I cannot wait. And, you know, I want to see Donovan getting this spacing too. Like that game, Donovan would have just had three dunks, you know? And
yeah.
And I think, and on top of that spacing, I think you kind of touched on it a little bit, is just the speed of the game was nice. The Jazz just, there was a lot of things in that game because it was very clear that all the players haven't quite figured out everything yet. And some of that might have been because it was a lineup that you'll never see, like Nigel Williams-Goss starting alongside Bojan and Joe. Like we might not.
It's hard to know if the pacing is going to be that fast or it's going to be a bit more calculating with Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell out there.
But
he's going to be faster.
Well, what we did see is because the talent on the floor is so cohesive, they figured it out. It was not very hard for them. After a little bit, they're like, oh, okay. And they were able to just generate baskets. But what happens when you have your best players on the floor? They'll have that spacing, and then they'll be able to play with that speed like they did in this game. I mean, Mieoni looked really, really good to me. And part of what made him look so good was because he was able to just go and transition. Jeff Green looked really solid, and some of that was just his, like he's, I think Jeff Green scored the first 4 or 5 points, and one of it was just from a transition dunk he got. And the Jazz are going to get a lot more of that.
Uncle Jeff is here.
Yeah,
he is. Uncle Jeff is here.
Just run and go, Donovan, run, go. It's very, very exciting. That second unit for Utah might, like last year, I remember we talked about this where we're looking at preseason and thinking about like, oh, you know, when Dante Exum's on the floor and our backup players are on the floor, they can just run and go. And it never really happened. And some of that's injury and some of that's just, you know, it's better to slow down when you have Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert. This is the season we might actually see it, because we saw it the first game. They just ran. And when there was an easy bucket to be had, they went and got it. And the Jazz have personnel to do it now.
Yeah. And I think what's going to be interesting about that second unit, now that you bring that up, is Joe Ingles is going to be the point guard of that second unit. Andy Larson has talked about this. We've talked about this before. I've written a couple posts about the Utah Jazz's four battle, you know, battle for the four spot. And one of those was Dante Exum playing the four. And it was more of like a, wow, did you just hit the mic, man? You just like attacked me.
Oh, sorry. I grabbed my Diet Mountain Dew cup and the straw knocked the microphone.
No, you always, when you can diet do, you do.
That's right. This podcast powered by Diet Mountain Dew.
Powered by Diet Mountain Dew. But I feel like what is so special about Utah's bench this year versus last year is you have guys who want to run, but you also have really strong veteran presence coming from the bench. Like, think about last year, the guys that you have coming off the bench. You know, you're talking about Hal Neto, Dante Exum, Royce O'Neal. Jay Crowder is the most veteran out of that. And Epe Udoh, who he's a veteran, but not necessarily like he's been plugging away in the NBA for these past 9 or 10 years. You know, he's been in EuroLeague. He flamed out first, worked on his game, got much better, much more refined, came back and was able to carve out a niche. But this year now you have Ed Davis, who on some NBA teams is starting. Like,
oh,
if Ed Davis, if he's with Golden State, he's a starter.
Right? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
If he's with the Lakers, he's the starter. And with the Utah Jazz, he's the backup. With Jeff Green, once again, on some NBA teams, he's starting. And now you have Joe Ingles with a ton of NBA experience, who's known, who's just a really good player, and would start on, I would say, half of NBA teams. Joe Ingles would start, if not more.
Oh, I would say easily.
Yeah, either at either wing spot, either at shooting guard or small forward. So, and he's going to be coming off the bench most likely to take some miles off those legs and keep him as efficient as possible throughout the contract and this year. And then your guards are two really hungry young guards in Dante Exum and Emmanuel Mudiay. And if you're worried, well, I mean, those are some young playmakers. I'm kind of worried about, you know, the ball being in their hands at all times. Well, not to worry. Joe Ingles is going to be your point guard. And as you watched Australia, that's a really good combination. Mm-hmm. That's a really good thing to have. And one thing that is so jarring for me was seeing Jeff Green grab the rebound, bring the ball down court, like at a frenetic pace, and then start to initiate the offense. And it was there where I was like, this is what Dante Exum was talking about in practice when he said, I've played one, I've played two, I've played three, I've played four. Because the Utah Jazz are trying to hide where the tip of the spear is on every single play. And so now when whoever's bringing the ball up and is initiating the offense and you're going, if Jeff Green's bringing the ball down, that might mean Dante Exum is now the four, just depending on who picked him up mm-hmm. and how they're going to run it and just picking your spots. And so it's going to be and just the positioning, you know, where things are on the floor. So it's going to be insane to watch that. And you and I, before we started the podcast, we were kind of talking about this. Are we getting duped by the Jeff Green experiment? Because this is kind of what happens with Jeff Green. He goes to a place, people are like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize he was this athletic. He's a ball handler. He can shoot like 33 to 37% from three, depending, you know, on the year. And then you start to be this like, well, if we just throw more usage into him, maybe this guy, maybe we're going to be the ones not left at the altar when he runs. Mm-hmm. And he's 32. By all means, he is who he is. But at the same time, the Utah Jazz are a system, are a development place where sometimes that logic does not apply, as we know from players like Joe Ingles, who have been able to find more of their game as time goes on, or George Hill, where he had a bit of a renaissance later on. And so it's going to be interesting to see what could possibly become of Jeff Green.
Well, he's definitely going to be put in the best position to succeed. And that's the thing is like, so two players that I've just been surprised at their ability to handle is Jeff Green and Bojan. And so that's honestly, and you hit the nail on the head with this. No, you don't know where this offense is going. It's not your dad's style of basketball where it's like you give it to the point guard and he dribbles it up and then he calls for the play and then the picker, you know, it's get the rebound and go. Like someone like George Niang, who looked like a point guard in that game, he was facilitating like crazy.
Royce O'Neal had six assists.
And I would say he's probably one of the less good playmaking wings on the team, and he had six assists, so that tells you a lot about the system.
He had a really good game. He was another guy where I was like, he just looks – there's a certain thing where sometimes a player just has a good game in preseason, and there's no way they could replicate that effort. Like if you put him in the same situation, it you know, some like 17th man who's going to end up as a two-way player or cut. Versus like when Royce O'Neal checked in from the bench, it was just – the Jazz just went on, I believe it was a 26-3 run.
Mm-hmm.
And Royce O'Neal was the reason for that.
Absolutely impacted the game like crazy. Like he looked like a better ball handler. He looked like a better, like he just looked more comfortable. He looked more like, you know, he knew he belonged there. He's not as, you know, worried about making a mistake.
The minute he checked in, he was guarding Jerome Randall, their best player, and just shut him down. Jerome Randall was trying to get some buckets, and then they put Royce out there, and they're like, no, we ain't doing this tonight. We're not playing like this. And
he stopped him. He just absolutely stoned him. And then, you know, he hit some shots. I know he hit at least 1 3. I can't remember all of his stats, but he just looked really, really solid. And, you know, he looked great. I was really pleased with what we saw from Oni. He looked really good. He was passing the ball really nicely. And then
he's making good reads.
Just overall, the whole team just moved the ball as the game went on. They just really, it was probably just a good game for them to get some of their jitters out and, just get the ball moving and feel each other out a little more in a game where you're feeling a little bit of pressure finally. And so that's good.
Yeah.
But the whole team just figured it out. And what happens if they don't shoot as badly as they did from three on Wednesday? That's the exciting part, is what happens when their threes are falling at a high rate.
What happens? I think what's interesting, and I have a clip here. It's Jeff Green. He's talking to the Salt Lake Tribune and a whole gaggle of reporters about what they've been asking him to do. And when you're listening to him, you can also sense that this is what they're asking basically everyone not named Gobert and Ed Davis and Tony Bradley to do on every possession. And just take a listen.
It's amazing. I said it to Ed even during the open practice that we had, that, you know, the fans really came out here to support, and they definitely showed it during the open practice and first preseason. So that was the most fans I've ever played in front of for a preseason game. So I'm loving the energy.
This coach encourage you to be able to want to initiate the offense, you know, push the transition, kind of initiate the offense?
That's one of many things he encouraged me to do. You know, with the personnel that we have a bunch of guys who can bring the ball to the floor and initiate the offense. So, me as a versatile guy who can rebound and push it, he expects that from me, and I'll do my best to, do a good job at, doing that. So I think it'd be a good challenge. It'd be fun for me. So, looking forward to it.
So much movement on this team. A lot of teams really don't have that. How different is that for you? Just
movement and what way?
Just all the offensive actions.
That's fun. You got guys who can score at any given moment, but when our guys are all unselfish and we play for each other, it makes the game fun. Everybody's going to touch the ball. Everybody's going to share the ball. And, we're happy for each other. That's the biggest thing.
You mentioned that.
So he touched on a few things there. He touched on the movement. The Jazz run that motion offense, and it is a bit of a blender. And they talk about always trying to at that advantage offense, and now they have players to be able to run that. And now he just has guys who can rebound and take the ball down court, and he wants that. He wants people to initiate.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he sounds like a guy that's actually enjoying things. Like, he talked about how it's fun with all the movement and the actions. Him mentioning that initiating the offense. I mean, there's so many guys on this team that can initiate the offense and go. I mean, we might see a more faster paced team than we've ever seen, because I think really when you have talent like this, things get simpler in a lot of ways. Like, you have guys, like, if there's an advantage to get a bucket, I mean, the easiest way to create an advantage in advantage basketball is in transition, when there's only one defender and there's two of you running up the court. I mean, that's the essence of it, is just get that easy bucket. Easy buckets are good offense. And so he can do that. Oni, Royce O'Neal, Donovan, Mike Conley, all these guys can run and pass and finish at the rim. It's just exciting. There's just not a lot of, if anything, I honestly had a lot of questions answered. I don't even know if I came into that game with that many questions. I was just curious to see what it looked like, and really what it looked like is what we had all expected. And right. there weren't any things that I was like, oh, whoa, boy. It wasn't like when we watched Enes Kanter playing defense for the Celtics and they couldn't stop anything. It was like, oh, boy, Bojan can handle the ball. My goodness. Or, oh, my gosh, Jeff Green just stopped a transition play by catching a lob at the height of its peak. Like, we yeah, just saw there, some there's, crazy there's some things.
Interesting things. Yeah, there's some interesting wrinkles where these weren't possibilities last season. And so I think that opens it up. The Utah Jazz, they will play the Milwaukee Bucks tonight, if you're listening to this on a Wednesday. If not, they played them last night, and you know the result. But I think what's going to be interesting about the matchup is, so far, Giannis looks like he's going to be playing. And so Utah has a chance to put out their, you know, their main guys and just see, hey, how do we stack up against an MVP and all-star caliber players? What do we have? What do we have here? And what do we need to work on? And that would be a really good scrimmage for them to play those guys about 15, 20 minutes and see what happens. I'm not sure if Mike Conley is going to play because they talked about they're just kind of waiting to see what the trainers have to say. Mm-hmm. And I even wrote today, we might not see him for a little bit, and that's totally okay. He's probably the last guy on this team that probably needs preseason to get all going. He's a smart, intelligent basketball player. He can quickly integrate himself in any team, any structure. He's a great player who's a plug and play who can level up if he needs to be the man and be the superstar. He's a guy who can gear down if he needs a playmaker and get his guys involved. He's a perfect complementary player and star for the Utah Jazz. And so, if anything, if they do start holding him, I could kind of see them holding him until they get back from these two preseason road trips. And then he has his debut in front of, like, when they played maybe the Portland Trail Blazers or something, when they play Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum and have a good matchup there. But at the same time, if you have a chance to play Giannis and you can see how you guys do, you got to do it. You just got to do it. So I just want to see him though. I want to see how Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell look in that backcourt.
Yeah. And
that's
the
thing I'm really excited about.
Absolutely. Like, I just want to see them play. I mean, I think honestly, it'll just look really solid. I just, you know, both of them will be able to handle the ball, and then you'll have multiple ball handlers. Like, Conley can take just some spot up threes that I don't know how much he was able to do. I haven't watched enough Memphis to know how much he did that there, but considering he was the best player on the team, I bet they wanted the ball in his hands as much as possible. And so there will be a lot of times where he might just be able to take the ball and just take a spot up three a lot of the time with how much talent is on this team. It's just a wealth of riches that the Jazz have right now in terms of just talent and skill level. All these guys, and that's the thing, is the ball moved on offense when the Jazz were playing and they found simple, easy shots. They just weren't falling that game, but we might also be just getting used to the fact that Utah's going to be protecting Conley all season. It's one of those things where, like, if he plays great, but the Jazz are just going to be ultra protective of him all year, because the goal for the Jazz this season isn't to just get better. The goal for the Jazz this season is to win a ring. And that's what they've all said. Jeff Green mentioned that, I want to see him play against the Bucks because I'm selfish and I like watching them play, but we're a championship team now. And so now we're kind of dealing with the things that championship level teams deal with, resting players here and there. If they are even the slightest bit worried about Conley, they're going to, rest on the side of caution. Games against the Adelaide 36ers don't matter that much. And so they're not going to risk injuring him, you know?
Most preseason games don't matter that much. There's a reason the NBA has been like trying to cut as many of these suckers as possible.
Yeah, like the worst thing ever is if Mike Conley goes out there and gets hurt. So if the Jazz feel like, oh, this, you know, he's got something that's just feeling not quite right, it doesn't matter. They're going to rest him. And I'm glad they do, because I don't want to see him hurt. The worst thing ever is when you see a player hurt. And when you're in a team where, like, you know, the Jazz have all the pieces to, and they have as good a shot as anyone out there right now to win the title, they're going to err on the side of caution. So if I was betting, I'd say, I bet Mike Conley doesn't play tomorrow night, but you know what? Maybe he does. Either way, that's what we're going to deal with probably all season. I think that's going to be annoying for us writing game previews and wondering who plays and what not, but
it's just very real if he only plays like 66 games. And so this is kind of how it be. Let's cut. We're going to cut for a quick commercial break. And then when we get back, we will answer the question, is Boyan worse than Derek Favors?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
And we're back. So, James, I got to ask you, is Bojan Bogdanović worse than Derek Favors?
The answer to that is no. Bojan is not worse than Derek Favors. some of these questions, hey, guess what? It's time for the season to start, because these types of questions make me want to pull whatever hair left I have out, because it's just like, It's honestly, you know what? I'm a big Derek Favors fan, but Derek Favors is a center, you know? Bojan Bogdanović is a wing. So it's just different. If we want to talk about what the Jazz needed more, I mean, honestly, that question was answered when Dennis Lindsay signed Bojan Bogdanović instead of Derek Favors, right? You know? There's the answer. If he was, I don't even think this is a debate. It's just the Jazz needed shooting, and they needed playmaking, and they needed wing scoring, and that's what they got. They didn't have it last year, and guess what? We couldn't score against the Houston Rockets. And what happened in that series? We got run out of the gym in game one and two, and they had to put in Jay Crowder, and that's how we won one of our games. That's your answer. The Jazz had to have scoring. They had to have a player that fit better, and we're already seeing the fruits of that. There's no question.
And we talked about this at the beginning of the podcast. The Utah Jazz ran three different ways. And one of those was with Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert. And that one seemed to be very contractual. It seemed to feel as though when Derek Favors signed a contract with Utah Jazz, he knew he could become trade bait, which he did. We talked about this all last season. People were like, oh, no, you can't trade Derek Favors and blah, 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 blah. And you're not going to do it. And the contract was designed to get traded. And guess what? He did. To make room for Bojan Bogdanović when he was signed in free agency. So he was on the court, but it felt like it was like a contractual mandated. So he played at the four for a little bit. So he had minutes so he could hit certain metrics. So it would look good and blah, blah, blah. And ego. Let's be frank. Like everyone wants to have their ego pet. And so that's just how it worked out. And the Utah Jazz played very slow. They did not play that, as you said, that rotation very often. It was a very token, like 3 to 4 minutes to start the game. And then they didn't play again together. They weren't back together. It wasn't like the Utah Jazz's final lineup was ever Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert. If anything, it was either Rudy Gobert or Derek Favors who was sitting on the bench to end the game, depending on who was rolling. So that lets you know that the Utah Jazz had two starting caliber fives. So if you're out there on the internet, like debating, well, you know, well, you lose Derek Favors and you're putting in Bojan Bogdanović in his place, then you're probably really confused because you think Bojan Bogdanović is a center. That is basically what your idea is. And so with the Jazz now, when you're looking at them, you really have to compare same for same, and that's Bojan Bogdanović and Jay Crowder. If you have Bojan Bogdanović and Jay Crowder, then, you know, oh boy, you're all good. You're fine. Like, with Bojan Bogdanović replacing with Jay Crowder, you actually get better offense. You get much better defense as well. Oh, wait, but I thought Jay Crowder was this really great defensive player. No, he was actually below average. If you even look at cleaning the glass, he was in lower percentile on a lot of defensive metrics. If you're looking at defensive box plus or minus, yeah, want to know why Jay Crowder is probably going to show better at defensive box plus or minus? Because he played with Rudy Gobert. The thing about Rudy Gobert is that he makes people look really, really good. One. Okay, sorry, guys. So we're picking up. You guys probably didn't hear anything. But the problem was James dropped out. We had some technical difficulties. We're back. We're rolling. This
hey,
is so
natural.
Is that
natural. A bust on top of me? Because I yeah. the only one.
Yeah. I'm just saying somebody, one of us has really good internet. The other one doesn't. I'm not going to point names. I'm not going to point fingers here. I'm not going to name names. I'm just saying that one of us, you know, like just, you know, could download a movie probably within this century. One of us can't. Not gonna put anything out there, James. But what we are saying, it is so dumb to compare Bojan and Derek Favors. The person that you should be comparing Bojan to is Jay Crowder, and Bojan is a better offensive player. He makes more shots, and because he makes more shots, he's not. The Jazz's defense is going to have time to get back and get set. They're not going to have to be running back in transition. Those extra possessions are going to be key. And then the other thing, I am so sick of this Bojan Bogdanović slander that he's a terrible defender. I hate how Twitter turns this into people are either trash or elite. And the problem is Bojan is neither. He's just good.
Yeah, he's
that's
just
it.
Fine. He's fine.
He's just fine. He's fine. And the thing, and if you're comparing Bojan with Jay Crowder and you're like, well, Jay Crowder, well, his box plus or minus was way better than this. Jay Crowder played with effing Rudy Gobert and Derek Favors at the center position all the dang time as a four. All the dang time. He had amazing, amazing people cleaning up his messes. So to really like hammer on that, you're missing a part of how Rudy Gobert just is able to make people look really good on defense. Joe Ingles, able to look a lot better on defense than what he might be because of Rudy Gobert. Jay Crowder was able to be the beneficiary of that. Ricky Rubio. Donovan Mitchell. Every person who's played for the Utah Jazz has got to look better. Gordon Hayward. It's a thing. And so to say that, well, you know, the Jazz defense isn't going to be as good. Is Rudy Gobert going to take on more responsibility this season? Oh, you betcha. He's going to be, he has a lot more pressure on him, and he's going to have a lot less leeway if Ed Davis isn't rolling. But there were some nights where Derek Favors didn't have it as well on the defensive end. This isn't this thing where Derek Favors was the constant stalwart always on that defensive end. Was he pretty consistent? Yes, but he's not always going to bring it. Ed Davis, likewise, is an offensive monster, and that's the dude you should be comparing him to. Like, that's the dude that you should be comparing Derek Favors to not Bojan Bogdanovic, because Bojan Bogdanovic isn't here to play the five position. If you think he is, you need to get your head checked.
Mm-hmm. No, it's just silly. Let's start the season. How about that? Because now we can stop like talking about Derek Favors. Like, I love Derek Favors. I hope they,
I hope
that we have it's going to be really cool to see him come back when he comes and plays the Jazz. And I hope the Jazz fans give him a huge applause, because he's a big time part of our team history now. But now we are a new team. Now can we just focus on the team we're on and stop doing this like, oh, Ricky Rubio was actually amazing because, you know, this real plus minus looked really good when he was. I don't care. You know, let's see what happens with our new team. And there's a reason we let those guys go. There's a reason we signed these guys. The Jazz look like they have an identity. Probably my final thought now, and we can probably end it here soon, is that the Jazz played a very consistent style throughout the entire game against Adelaide, and they're going to do the same thing when they play Milwaukee against Adelaide. It was Ed Davis starting at center, and then backing him up was Tony Bradley, who, by the way, looked pretty solid against Adelaide. Let's see how he does later on, but I think we might be okay with Tony Bradley being our third center now. But now when Rudy comes off, it's going to be Ed Davis and four wings, and that's how the Jazz play. And it's really exciting to have a very clear offensive identity.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest key with this whole thing. You can't look at players in a vacuum, because it's a team game, y'all. If you're saying, well, so-and-so, Ricky Rubio is a good player, for example. He's good in transition. He's a good playmaker, and he's a defensive pest. If you have five shooters and, say, a five man that can shoot the ball out to the three-point line, a pick-and-pop guy like that, Ricky Rubio is a good point guard for that system. He's a slasher in that system. The problem is Ricky Rubio last year played with two plotting guys who cannot space the floor, with Favors and Gobert, for 10 minutes of his game. Ricky Rubio was out there with guys who couldn't spread the floor. And then he was out there with Donovan Mitchell and Joe Ingles, who Donovan Mitchell is a slasher. And so what does that do to a team? It's just not the right fit. Likewise with Derek Favors out there, it wasn't the right fit. You're not getting the best version of Derek Favors, and you're not getting the best version of Ricky Rubio, versus like you swap them out and all of a sudden with the same money that was used for those two players, the Jazz now have Bojan Bogdanovic, Jeff Green, Mike Conley, and Ed Davis. Like, and now all of a sudden the pieces fit. You have guys who space the floor, who can handle the ball, who are pick and pop players. And now your guy who you need to rim run in Rudy Gobert has a space. Now your slasher has space. It changes everything now. The pieces fit. And so this whole stupid thing when you're looking at comparing same for same, A, you need to make sure that you're comparing the right players. One, make sure your straw man argument isn't obviously a straw man. Two, remember that a lot of these defensive metrics, if you're going to spout them on the internet, they're really related to the people who are also on the court. So you need to pay attention to who is also on the court, because even if you're spouting on-off metrics also applies to who is on the court at the same time when that person got on and when they went off. And sometimes people are just paired with the right type of guy. And finally, if you think that Derek Favors is the better player than Bojan Bogdanovic, and you think that the Jazz are going to be worse with Bojan Bogdanovic out there, oh my gosh, if you're out there, just in your head, replace Derek Favors with Bojan Bogdanovic in Indiana when Victor Oladipo went down, and just let me know how you think that team does. And we out. We're done.
Because guess they wouldn't have made the playoffs. They wouldn't have made the playoffs. Like, it's flat out. Like, Derek Favors looks, and I've been watching him play for for the Pelicans, and he looks pretty darn solid like we expected. But you know what? He's not the player that's going to turn around a franchise. Bojan Bogdanović carried a team into the playoffs. We watched Bojan destroy us twice with, like, last season. Bojan destroyed us twice. We lost to Indiana like by 30 points one game and then 20 the next. And it was freaking Bojan Bogdanović destroying our hopes. So I don't know. We've seen it firsthand how good he is. And so I don't know. It's a dumb argument. But luckily, he's on the Jazz now, and that makes me very happy. And the Jazz have shooting, and they'll be able to shoot the lights out against anyone. It's really exciting.
Yeah, we got a good season ahead of us. And so with that, I think we're going to be wrapping up here. So last thing, guys, do you want to hang out with your favorite people on October 25th? Do you want to meet me, James Hansen, and Griff Dunk, and the rest of the awesome SLC Dunk staff? Do you want to hang out with Tavin, meet Caleb, you know, talk to Jason? Get to meet the peeps, you know, one-on-one. See, how would you feel about that? What if we're eating wings too? James, what if we're eating wings?
Best wings on the planet.
Best wings. That's why you got to show up to Dunk Night Out. October 25th, we're going to be watching the Lakers game. It is an away game. We're all going to be there. We're going to have some cool swag to give away. We have Breaking Tea t-shirts. We have purple mountain jerseys. We have a... Dare we plug it? Do we plug?
We have a signed George Niang first responders jersey from the Stars. Signed.
Yeah.
Signed. It's America.
This is a really unique jersey, actually. This is really awesome. We also have some tickets for some Stars games that we're gonna give out. We have some insane giveaways. We also have drink specials, wings, and of course, we're going to be able to watch the Utah Jazz take down the Los Angeles Lakers. So, you want to be there for this. So, hit us up on Facebook. The event is there. You can RSVP. If you RSVP, you are put in for the raffle for a lot of these really cool prizes. We also have something for everyone. We have stickers to give out, so you can finally tell all your friends that. Put it on your computer. Put it on your car. Put it on your child.
There you go.
Sticker. Just so everyone knows that you like SLC Dunk. I mean, James has stickers, SLC Dunk stickers on all his children's heads.
Guys, you better go. It's going to be freaking fun. And you might get some surprising people show up there. We'll see. But make sure you sign up if you want to win a jersey. Get some ticket vouchers for Stars game. It's going to be a lot of fun. And it's my favorite wing place in the world. It's the best. So, guys, make sure you go sign up. Go to Facebook and sign up.
Check it out. And as always, follow us on the Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Check us out at slcdunk.com and subscribe to this. Man, if you listen to this and you're like, man, I really wish I got a notification for this, you can subscribe, man. Just hit that, just pound that subscribe button. Just check it out. And with that, we'll talk to you guys next week after two different preseason games. Oh my goodness. Talk to you guys then.
See ya.
Bye.